Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Monday, November 7th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, it's Monday, November 7th. It's officially the last day we will talk about the World Series. We will put it behind us after this next 5 minutes. The Houston Astros are your World Series champions after defeating the Philadelphia Phillies Saturday night. They take the series 4-2. Yordan Alvarez with another three-run home run, one of his biggest of the year. And the Astros ride a dominant bullpen, and really they give Dusty Baker what he's been trying to get for 40 some years, a managerial win in the World Series. Can't feel any happier for Dusty. Can't feel any more icky about the Astros winning. But that's the way it was. The best team won, and the team with the best bullpen won. What did you take away from the Astros winning the World Series this year?
Yeah, I just think, this is probably as close to a dynasty as we're going to see for a while, Joe. What, they've been in a World Series four times since 2017, four AL pennants, and they've won it twice. I don't think the last 6 years, I think they've been in the ALCS all six times. So this is a really good ball club, a good organization. And there's only five guys, I think, maybe five players left from the 2017 cheating Astros. So, they turned this thing over, and you're right. They were the best club. They beat Philadelphia. And what a bullpen, Joe. Just wow.
Yeah, it just underscores to me how much they didn't need to do what they did in 2017 and 2018 to mess that all up. Because you're right. They are a good organization. They are a well-run and well-coached and well-organized franchise, and they just didn't need to do what they did in 2017 that just tarnished all of it. I cannot look at this championship and not think about and not have doubts about its legitimacy because of what they've done in the past. And it's just heartbreaking because they didn't need to do it then. They proved that they can win, with what they have. They were dominant. You're right. Their pitching was outstanding. It was the best pitching in all of baseball all season long. And really, they showed sort of what the Guardians couldn't do in the postseason, what they couldn't do during the regular season. They came up with timely three-run home runs. Three-run home runs still change ball games. And when you can do that, when you've got a Yordan Alvarez always sitting there, ready to drive one out of the park and end a ball game, you've got a chance with all those other elements that you can put out on the field to be a winner.
Yeah, you're right. And I thought, I'm the classic second guesser, but I thought, I thought they should have stayed with Wheeler. I thought the Phillies should have stayed with Wheeler in the sixth inning against Alvarez. I thought his stuff was still good, but Jose Alvarado comes in there and gives up that three-run homer, Joe, and that thing might still be going, 450 feet over the batter's eye in center field? I mean, that was a shot.
I'll tell you, that was a shot. I was watching it on a projection screen without the audio, without the sound, and I was at a cookout, and that was one of those moments where you just stop everything you're doing and you look at what happened and you watch the replay, three or four times, and you're like, oh man, he got every bit of that pitch and he drove it out of the park. So, we haven't seen anything like that, here in Cleveland. Oscar Gonzalez's walk-off home run against Tampa Bay is probably the one of the more significant home runs of the year here in town. Once the Guardians can do what Alvarez does on a consistent basis, I think you know, the sky's the limit for that club. But hats off to the Astros. They won it. They were the best team all year long. And now we don't have to talk about them again because the offseason has begun. And we've got plenty to talk about in the offseason, right?
Yeah. Well, one more thing. What about a rookie winning the MVP of the World Series and the MVP of the ALCS as Jeremy Pena did? That's, you know, he's not tainted by any of the Astros' past sins. So right. What a player. Jeez.
Yeah, and we'll get into awards talk here in a little bit, and you know, we can legit question as to, you know, for a lot of people maybe why he wasn't on in their top three or in the conversation all year long in terms of rookie of the year voting. Maybe there was some inconsistencies there during the regular season, but certainly during the postseason, the Astros found something, and they found a guy who was a consistent performer at the plate. The stat that jumped out at me was he's the first rookie shortstop to hit a home run in the World Series. If that was correct, you know, when you think about Derek Jeter was a rookie in the World Series, and you know, there's all sorts of guys who have been rookies in the World Series, and Jeremy Pena was the first rookie shortstop to hit a home run in the World Series. Pretty remarkable all this time. Postseason begins. First order of business for the postseason, obviously, is all the free agents, you know, immediately go on the market. And we're in that negotiating period where their original teams or their current teams are the only ones that can negotiate with them, the only ones that can, you know, work out a contract during this sort of, you know, this quiet period or whatever.
Yeah, it's a 5-day quiet period, yeah.
So, you know, if there's let's say Aaron Judge wanted to go to San Francisco, he's not allowed to talk dollars and cents with San Francisco. Only the Yankees are allowed to, you know, put money out there in front of him for the next few days. But then I believe what's the date when it all starts?
November 10th. It's Thursday. This Thursday, you know, teams can still call up Judge and say he's the greatest thing since sliced bread, you know, other than the Yankees, but they just can't tell him, you know, they can't tell him, you know, what terms they're going to offer him.
Right. Yeah. I would. It's sort of always a wink and a nudge sort of thing, but you know, if a guy wants to go, there's no way that they're going to, that, you know, having that exclusive bargaining period is going to stop him. So the Guardians only really have to worry about one free agent right now. That's Austin Hedges. He, you know, we know that they expressed maybe some sort of interest in bringing him back. It would make sense to bring one or both of Luke Maley or Austin Hedges back next year and let Bo Naylor sort of mature a little bit more at Triple-A. But you kind of want to upgrade that position maybe in terms of the bat and the offensive production if you can.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the spots they can do that, Joe. I mean, catcher, DH, first base, you know, we've talked about those three spots that, you know, I think if Cleveland wants to add some power, they could do that. But, you know, they, like we've said, you know, they put so much emphasis on their catchers, you know, handling the pitching staff, controlling the running game, you know, really kind of sacrificing their offensive statistics. So, you know, they can be, their pitchers can be the best they can be. So, you know, when you think about that, Hedges is, you know, the perfect guy. So is Maley. And, you know, Bo Naylor is kind of the, you know, the aberration right now. He's a catcher who can hit. And does a nice job behind the plate, but is he seasoned enough? And, you know, that's the question they'll have to try to answer this offseason headed into spring training.
Yeah, I still see them starting Naylor at Triple-A at the beginning of the year and maybe bringing him along in late April, May, something like that. Just, you know, after the weather cools down or warms up a little bit here in Cleveland, and a guy gets hot down at AAA. That's always been Tito's MO with rookies. So we'll see how that goes. As far as the other aspect of the offseason that we've been tracking, that we'll continue to track, the awards have been churning out and keep coming. Guardians pretty much shut out of the Player's Choice Awards. Those were announced late last week, and Justin Verlander of the Houston Astros took home Comeback Player of the Year and Pitcher of the Year. No Guardians were named in the rookie category or the outstanding players. However, you know, I'm sure a guy like a Stephen Kwan got consideration, but it's sort of a precursor to the BBWAA awards that, you know, Julio Rodriguez is going to win Rookie of the Year pretty much hands down. So you didn't really expect to see Kwan get the Player's Choice Award as voted by his peers or the members of the Players Association.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Joe. I think, you know, Rodriguez looks like the guy that's going to win it from the Seattle rookie. But Kwan certainly, you know, distinguished himself, had a great year. And, you know, it would not surprise me if he finishes in the top three.
Well, that's we wait to find out the announcement tonight. The finalists will be revealed on Major League Baseball Network for the manager, rookie, Cy Young, and MVP awards. Those are the big ones that'll be rolling out this time next week, starting with the rookie on next Monday. So, you know, we'll see who finishes where and what the vote totals eventually are. But Guardians fans should pretty much brace themselves for the possibility that, you know, other than Terry Francona, who I think we all think is a pretty much a lock to be at least considered in the top three for manager, you know, there's a chance that Kwan even gets shut out of that top three in the rookie voting, with guys like Julio Rodriguez, Adley Rutschman, Bobby Witt Jr. I mean, even Jeremy Peña, although he didn't really do enough during the regular season to sort of warrant being in that top rookie conversation, there's a chance that, you know, he might get voted in there ahead of Stephen Kwan.
Yeah, this is a really strong rookie class. But boy, I don't know how you couldn't vote for Kwan in the top three if you watched him on any kind of regular basis. I mean, the guy, he's a gold glove winner. He's a, you know, fielding a Bible winner in left field, and just had an outstanding year. I don't know, you know, that's like a career year, Joe. I mean, he set the bar awfully high for himself. So it's going to be interesting just to see how, you know, what he does the rest of his career, because that's as good a rookie year as you're going to see, I think, from an overall baseball perspective.
Yeah, if there's regression, he might just be an average player next year instead of an above average defender and above average hitter. We wait to see where the Wilson Defensive Player of the Year and awards, those will be coming out, I'm assuming, by the end of this week. But then on Friday at the end of the week, we find out the Platinum Glove Award winner for the best overall defender in the American League and National League, and the team Gold Glove Awards. I'm assuming with four winners, the Guardians are a lock to win the team award in the American League. It would be the second time they've won that award since its inception in 2020. But you know, there's Silver Sluggers. The awards will continue to keep coming for the Guardians over the next week or so, as you know, all that's all part of the off season here, and you know, guys don't really can take it lightly, because these things help build contracts and help build, you know, careers. Like we said, we were talking before we started on here, you know, the Rookie of the Year voting is now tied to bonus pool money and service time for the winners.
You know, I think I don't think that this doesn't apply to Kwan, but let's say, you know, a rookie of the year comes up at the All-Star break, or, you know, and goes off in the second half and wins the award. Well, part of winning that award would give him a full year's service time instead of, you know, half a year. So, you know, that's a huge incentive, excuse me, for a young player to, you know, increase his value and get closer to arbitration and free agency.
Yeah, well, wasn't it Gary Sanchez a few years ago who only had, like, you know, 2 months of at-bats or whatever for the Yankees, and when he came up and he was under, I believe he was a finalist for the Rookie of the Year award, and the argument against him, and I don't think he didn't win it, but one of the arguments against him was, you know, it was a ridiculously short amount of time in the big leagues for him to be under consideration for the award. But still, in that situation, if he would have won it under the current, you know, setup, you know, maybe he gets a full year of service time. That's nothing to shake a stick at. That makes you a year, you know, closer to free agency, and that's what all these guys are playing for.
Yeah, that's you know, and that was part of the new basic agreement, you know, to enhance the value of younger players, because, you know, teams have you know, really shifted to building younger rosters, and you know, because younger players are cheaper. But now this is a way for a young player to increase his value.
Yeah, and getting a part of, I guess, what the union sort of felt like they earned in that negotiation process was getting more money into the hands of the younger players earlier, and that this is one of the ways that they could do that with that bonus pool money. And speaking of getting money into players' hands earlier and quicker, veteran closer Edwin Diaz announced, the Mets announced that they had reached a 5-year, $100 million contract, $102 million contract extension with Diaz, who's pretty much the National League equivalent or counterpart to Emmanuel Clase during the season in terms of closer and dominance at the back end of a bullpen. I think Clase pretty much beat him in almost every number and statistic. But, you know, Diaz playing in New York, and he's got the trumpet fanfare calling him in from the bullpen and all that. I guess if you get a catchy tune to welcome you into each game, it's worth, you know, $16 million more a year than what Class A is going to be making.
Yeah, what a, you know, Diaz obviously has more service time. You know, he was a free agent, and, you know, he became a free agent after the last out of the World Series Saturday night. But the Mets have apparently signed him to a five, like you said, Joe, a 5-year, $102 million deal. He went 3-1 with a 1.31 ERA, 32 saves, and he had 118 strikeouts in 62 innings. That's, you know, that's the thing. That's the thing that jumps out at you. But this guy was almost booed out of New York a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And with Class A signing a 5-year, what, $20 million extension at the start of spring training last year or this past season, you know, you really... You know, that's a coup for the Cleveland's front office. Obviously, it's, you know, Class A could have said no. You know, he could have, you know, turned it down and waited. But, you know, lots of times players want security, and this is the trade-off. And, you know, hopefully his nose isn't out of joint, and he keeps pitching like he did. He has because, what, there's two club options on the end of his 5-year deal, too. So, he could be here for a long time.
Right. Is a way for the Guardians to sort of, you know, make everybody feel happy and nice to come out and maybe announce early that they want to pick up those options and guarantee him even more money up front, because I don't know, if I'm Emmanuel Clase, it's human nature to look over there and say, hey, you know, I made more appearances than this guy. I saved more games. I was every bit as valuable to my team as Edwin Diaz was. And I'm going to be making $16 million less a year for what? For how many, you know, how many innings over the life of that contract? What, it's like 300 innings that he's going to be pitching. He's going to be making $20 million a year for it. If I'm Emmanuel Clase, if I wanted to get upset about something, maybe that's what I get upset about.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of that delicate line you walk, and that's why, you know, some guys like don't sign extensions. You trade off security for, you know, what could happen at the end of the year. Now you're comparing apples and oranges, you know, because Class A is what? I don't think he's got what, 2 years of a big league time. Yeah. And Diaz has, you know, he got his 6 years in, he was a free agent. So, you know, in the balance on how contracts are set up, you know, it's you know, the service time is a big element of it. But, you know, Class A also what in with a 5-year deal and two club extensions, you know, he gave away a lot of his, what, at least two of his free agent years, you know. So, right. You know, it's always that, you know. Do I go for security, or do I max this out and hammer away at every year, go to arbitration, you know, and bang it out that way? So, you know, it's you can't blame a guy either way.
He definitely got more money up front than he would have gotten had he just, you know, played along by the contract rules and gone, you know, service time the first 3 years and then arbitration the next three. He's getting more money sooner this way, but had he had the ability to negotiate that contract maybe at the end of this season as opposed to the end of last season, I think he probably would have doubled or maybe even tripled what he was would he be able to get out of the club, and the Guardians wouldn't have been able to sign him to an extension, because that they just don't offer that kind of money, and they especially don't offer it to a back end bullpen guy.
Yeah, what he had a 1.36 ERA compared to a Diaz 1.31, 42 saves compared to a Diaz's 32, pitched 72 innings compared to 62 by Diaz, and so, you know, they rode him hard this year, and he pitched well.
Yeah, and Diaz's contract, $102 million tops, the richest contract ever for a closer, which was previously, I believe, was, what, $89 million for Aroldis Chapman? So, I mean, even that wasn't over a $100 million contract. This is the first $100 million contract for a closer, which is, I mean, it's significant. It's a big deal, and that was the one big question, one of the big questions for the Mets, you know, going into this offseason was, would they be able to re-sign Diaz? So that's taken care of. And now we wait and we sort of watch who the next few dominoes are to fall. What's your feeling on the Aaron Judge situation? Are we going to get a quick resolution to that? Or do you think it's going to take a little while for things to settle out, and maybe we have to keep hearing about Aaron Judge throughout the entire offseason till after the winter meetings, until, you know, at some point later on when he finally signs? Or do you think this ends quickly and he gets locked up one way or another?
Yeah, I think the Yankees are going to have to strike fast. I think they're going to, you know, probably have to get him done by the winter meetings next month in San Diego. I would think they'd put an all-out push just to get him signed, get it behind him, and then go about, you know, building the rest of that team.
Who becomes maybe the next most attractive free agent out there, or the next most sought after? I mean, you've got, obviously, DeGrom will be on the market. He's sort of priority number one, but I think the Mets would want to have him back and would make an all-out effort, and, you know, Cohen can spend as much money as he wants. Maybe beyond those two guys, is there another guy who jumps up and really sort of is the marquee guy after those two? I'm thinking Correa.
That's a good, yeah. Correa's, he opted out, right?
He opted out, and, you know, he made the rounds during the playoffs. getting his face on TV a couple of times, and you know, he's obviously not going back to Minnesota. That was pretty much clear. So you're definitely going to see Carlos Correa in a big market, whether that's, you know, New York or, you know, somewhere else. I gotta believe he's going to be making quite a chunk of change at some point.
Yeah, the Yankees didn't want him, right? They really didn't bid on him, and they've got what, two or three really talented young shortstops. So it'd be interesting to see if he ends up there.
Yeah, it's always a possibility, but you know, there are other places for him to go to. The White Sox picked up their option on Tim Anderson, so. You know, Chicago's, you know, not a place where there's a need for him at the moment. So, yeah, several different places where Correa could wind up. It would be interesting to sort of watch and see what happens there. All right, Hoynsie, that's going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll be coming back on Wednesday to talk more about the awards finalists and where the Guardians are. We'll be taking some of your submitted questions through subtext, and we will talk to you then.